This is a Connectability Radio production.
The Shared Learning Forum series of workshops brought to you by Connectability.ca and DSTO.com.
Community Treatment Orders, CTOs. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow, with Magnus McFofo McCarthy from the Center for Addictions and Mental Health.
Good morning. I guess we'll begin our session together. The first guest is Magnus McFofo McCarthy, and he's currently the coordinator at Community Mental Health Services over at the Center for Mental Health and Addiction. And prior to that, he worked in a variety of capacities as a mental health therapist, a clinical coordinator, clinical director and for adolescent and mental health organizations in New York City, British Columbia, and Toronto. Presently, he's also a doctoral candidate in the Faculty of Social Work at the University of Toronto. He has areas of interest in mental health, HIV, AIDS, and international health and issues of diversity. So Magnus is going to be talking about community treatment orders, and that'll be for most of the hour. At the end, if you have any questions, we'll have a period of 10 minutes and we can ask questions. And if it seems right and you feel that, or is it okay if people ask in as they go along?
Yeah.
If something really strikes you and you kind of go, oh, I can't wait, then feel free, but try to keep it brief, okay? I guess for the moment, that's it.
Thank you very much, Roger. I hope you don't mind me standing. Thank you. And he did extremely well by trying to mention my other name, Mfuafo. Actually, the name is Magnus Mfuafo McCarthy. And it takes a lot of exercise to pronounce them Mfuafo, you know. So periodically, what I tell people is, to pronounce that name, you do this. You breathe in, Mfuafo. And it works out pretty well. So we'll get started with what we're going to be doing right now. We're going to be talking about CTOs. And when I was thinking, while thinking about what to do in terms of how to go about the presentation, this thought came to me. I said, why not look at CTOs as a whole? So we look at how CTOs came about and what is happening right now. And perhaps, if possible, maybe look at the future of CTOs. So that is what we did. So I tried to look at it this way and say, come up with the CTOs yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I thought I could say forever, but we cannot say that. So we move on. All right. So when we say CTO, what are we trying to say? But before we do that, we would want to give a little bit of a historical overview. So the objectives for this morning's presentation will be just an overview of CTOs in Ontario, and perhaps maybe delve slightly into what is going on in other parts of the world, and also having some understanding of the purpose and how it's used, and also the importance and some of the criticisms of CTOs, and then perhaps maybe give about two case scenarios. And my hope is that at the end of that, perhaps we may have, if not a basic, some understanding of how CTOs operate. And feel free to ask questions if you have anything that is really boggling your mind. But before we look at the historical views, in fact, I think I put the slide at the wrong place, but I would want us to look at what was happening, why did we come about, why did the CTOs come about. So why not look at why community-based treatment, or CTOs in all? Looking at it, I'm sure a lot of us may be familiar with this, the historical part, that about more than 40 years ago, there was a movement of people, this movement where people were advocating for taking people out of asylums and other things into the community. Why? Because the feeling was that the treatment that was given to these individuals in this environment wasn't very appropriate. It's because they felt they were being treated as maybe criminals and what have you. So there was a movement that came out that said, well, we need to move people into the community where they will be able to take care of themselves and do well. So that is basically what started, and that movement has really been ongoing, and that is what we consider institutionalization. And as a result, in Ontario, a number of facilities were closed. Up to now, in Ontario, I think the only facilities that are still open, long-term facilities, are, I think, Whitby, and then the other place. I always have difficulty pronouncing that, Pentagushan or something. Is that right? Cool. I've done well today. I've been able to pronounce it well. Those are the only long-term facilities that are now still available. Even within these facilities, there have been some changes. So talking about what has been happening. And when you think about it very well, you may think, why? Why that movement? There were numerous factors. And these are some of the things, other people were thinking, perhaps maybe there were great medical breakthroughs and things that necessitated the move. But looking at it critically, it wasn't. Looking through literature and some of the research that had taken place, we realized that it wasn't because of a medical breakthrough or the need for some of these things to happen. But a group of people who realized that these things weren't really working, it wasn't helping these people. And also when they look at it fiscally, it wasn't really appropriate because we're spending tons of money in these facilities, whilst in actual fact the outcome, what the expectation, wasn't really worth it. So they decided, well, why not look into something else? So that is why we have movements like ACTS, that is the Assertive Community Treatment Team, and community-based programs and programs of that sort coming up. And also the other aspect of this was family members started suing because they realized that their family members weren't doing well and they were living in the environment wasn't really appropriate. So they decided to do that way. So as a result, there was that movement. So with the advent of programs like ACT and all these community-based programs also came with CTOs. So the question we need to ask ourselves is, how did CTO come to Ontario? Well, so far as we know, it was instituted in December 2000. But prior to that, it was really, the bill, it's been talked about, it's come up as a discussion in Parliament where the legislation was being discussed by politicians and other things. But in actual fact, it wasn't approved until an incident occurred that was around, in fact, I think before 2000, the death of an Ottawa news broadcaster by name Brian Smith. I think he was killed by a mentally ill, and the newspaper had all kinds of description, mentally deranged or what have you individual. So as a result, because this individual came up, was maybe a celebrity in the eyes of many, because a news broadcaster, he was killed, people started scrambling. We need to come up with a law. We need to come up with something. And because this legislation was really being discussed, was being talked about, they really pushed it, and it became law. So in Egypt, for a while, it was considered Brian's law, named after Brian Smith. But eventually, in actual fact, they changed it because it then became a legislation, it became a law. That is what, historically, that is what we know about CTOs in Ontario. And in actual fact, when it came in the year 2000, there were other changes that were also made to the Mental Health Act. And some of them were amendments that were made to the, some of the changes included made criteria for involuntary assessment of individuals on form ones. So in this case, they included, somebody will be talking about a form, so I'm sure this person may go into the details of that, but we have a box B that was added to the form one. And also the police powers. Before then, a police officer has to have a proof that something was happening in a community before being able to apprehend an individual. So let me cite an example. For instance, you make a phone call to the police and say, Mr. X is abusing his wife, or maybe is behaving irrationally. When the police officer comes to the scene, he needs to see Mr. X doing it, or he needs to see signs of abuse before he'll be able to apprehend Mr. X. But now, with the new changes that were made to the police powers, based on the information that's been provided, when they come in and they verify, they have the right to apprehend the person. So that was really an interesting addition to it. And also the inclusion of CTOs that we'll be talking about right now. So let's look at CTOs. What is a CTO? I like this definition. There have been numerous definitions of CTOs, but I think I like this definition that's been given by Torrey and Zada Nowick. And it says CTOs, as it is an outpatient sort of program with a legal backing. And the essence of it is, in actual fact, is for individuals to be out there in the community, get treatment and the support that they need. However, if they don't follow through with the expectation of the treatment, they could always be brought back to the hospital for treatment. And I think when you look at it, in essence, that is what CTO is about. Giving all the support, so instead of keeping people in the hospital, so giving them the opportunity to really take care of themselves in the community. And with the support of the physician, be it a psychiatrist or maybe a medical practitioner who has experience in mental health. And also a community support, be it a case manager, an ACT team, or what have you. So that is the essence. Now, what is the purpose of CTOs? The essence of CTO is to provide this support. What is the essence of it? The purpose is to provide a person who suffers from a serious and persistent mental disorder. So now, please note the word serious and persistent mental disorder, because perhaps maybe we may address that. With a comprehensive plan of a community-based treatment or care and supervision that is less restrictive than being detained in a psychiatric facility. So that is the problem that's really being brought up. being kept in a facility, the concern is that, well, people feel restricted because they're unable to do things that they want to do. So the best bet is to keep them out in the community. And keeping them out in the community also raises concerns by people who feel, well, the mere fact that you've been diagnosed with a mental illness means, well, you're going to be hitting people, you're going to be killing people, you're going to be destroying things. And that is the perception of people about mental illness in the community. But perhaps maybe we may look at an aspect of that too. CTO is valid for a 6-month period, though it's renewable. So it's 6 months, renewable for another 6 months. However, after 1 year on a CTO, there's supposed to be a review board meeting, a review of the CTO. So what happens is after being on a CTO for a year, a patient doesn't necessarily have to appeal the CTO, but automatically a physician and a few other people would have to meet for a review of the CTO to find out why the person still needs to be on a CTO after 1 year. The reason for that is that it also gives some form of right to the individual who's on a CTO. Why? Because the perception of CTO is that it infringes on the rights of people. So in Ontario, they really built this in to ensure that at least there's some form of support for the rights of the client or the individual as well. So that is what we're looking at. However, it could be terminated early. And the termination involves, well, an individual has a right to refuse a CTO. An individual has a right to hire a lawyer to appeal the decision that has been made regarding the treatment. But my question has always been, how many clients that we work with, the mentally ill, really have the ability to say, well, I want to talk to a lawyer? You know, some of us, even in my life, I don't think I have a lawyer, you know. But so the question we ask is, how many clients have the right to say, well, I have to talk to my lawyer? Well, but for your information, there have been a few who have been able to do that. So it depends on how you look at it. For whom are CTOs intended? We use the word persistently mentally ill, serious and persistent mental illness. So the question we're asking is, then that means CTO is not meant for every individual who's diagnosed with mental illness. So what we can say is it's meant for a specific group of people. And when we look at it, in actual fact, the literature tells us, well, we may have about 10% of the entire mental health population. I mean, people who've been diagnosed. It will be within the range of about 10%. So it's not everyone. The fact that you've been diagnosed with mental illness does not necessarily mean you need to be on a CTO. That's something you need to bear in mind. So who are these individuals that CTOs are intended for? And what we have here is some people who have the experience of recurrent hospitalization. So what happens is we have the revolving door syndrome, as Hide puts it. He says these are individuals who go into the hospital, they are hospitalized, they get stabilized in the hospital based on medication and support that they get. And then when they are discharged and they go back into the community, they refuse to follow through with treatment. So their condition deteriorates or they decompensate and they have to be brought back to the hospital. And when they return to the hospital, they do well, go back, so we have that revolving door, in and out, in and out. So these are the people that CTO is really intended for. And also we have a group of people who have difficulty engaging voluntarily in outpatient follow-up. Revolving, they come to the hospital, in and out, you give them all the support, they go back, they refuse to follow up. So these are people that CTOs are meant for. So when you put a CTO in place, they have no choice but to follow through. And if they don't follow through, as we said earlier, always the chances of they being brought back to the hospital. So that is something we need to look at. And another group is people who have the tendency of benefiting. So whilst looking at the pool, one thing we need to look at is, well, if we have a client who has a tendency of in and out, I mean, being a part of the revolving door syndrome, would they benefit from such a treatment? A number of them would, but it's not all of them. And that's something we need to bear in mind. And also, they don't necessarily have to be incapable to consent to treatment. They could be capable, having an insight. And in actual fact, with CTOs, capability really depends on quite a number of things. Usually it's the physician who does the assessment. But the question that we always ask is that the person really have an insight into their condition. Do they understand what is being discussed, what is being talked about? So in an assessment, these are some of the things we try to look at. And what is the criteria or eligibility? What qualifies an individual to be on a CTO? And these are some of the points we have. For a 3-year period, one has to be hospitalized more than once. So if within a 3-year period an individual has been hospitalized maybe twice, they qualify. But more often than not, most of the clients tend to be hospitalized more than twice. But I mean, the basic qualification is that. And also, all for a cumulative period of 30 days. So if the person has been hospitalized more than 30 days, even one admission for more than 30 days, yes, they meet the criteria for CTO. Or been on a CTO before. So if you've been on a CTO, automatically you qualify because you've been on. Now, before we even delve into other aspects of CTO, I just want us to go back into a little bit into time and what is happening in other parts of the world. So we're trying to look at CTOs in other jurisdictions. In 1985, before CTO was introduced in Ontario, Saskatchewan happened to be the pace setter. Saskatchewan has had CTOs for since 1995, I believe. And fortunately, CTOs in Saskatchewan is not really being utilized as much as it's being utilized in Ontario. And when you look through literature, I mean, the papers that have really come out, what we see is that it's because CTOs in Saskatchewan is for a three-month period, unlike other parts of the world where it's 6 months. And also, when you look through research, it tells us that when people are on treatments, like CTOs, usually they do well when you're on it for a longer period of time, maybe for about 6 months plus. So it's also an issue. But so far, it seemed to be doing very well in Saskatchewan, because a number of research that has been done always have positive responses. But on the other hand, we also need to bear in mind that the responses always are from doctors, not from the clients who've been on it. So that is something we also need to bear in mind. Apart from Saskatchewan, Nova Scotia introduced CTOs in 2000, just last year, summer last year. So we are yet to find out what is going on there. And before then, Australia and New Zealand happen to be pace setters. In fact, they've had it since the 90s. And in fact, it's been introduced in virtually every region of Australia and New Zealand. And in Etrafa, we have other countries like the Benelux countries, talking about Belgium, some of the Belgium, Luxembourg, and some of the other countries. They also have it. And a greater majority of the European Union. UK had it just introduced about last year in 2007. Israel have had it since 1991, but when you look through the literature in actual fact, doctors don't find it really beneficial because they feel it gives them police powers. That is just policing their clients. They are not really very much into it. The reason why they introduced CTOs, a similar CTO in Israel in 1991, was to curb this idea of the medical approach to treatment, while it's always the physician who is in charge, but to give some power to clients. By actual fact, a lot of people started complaining, more so the physicians. So in actual fact, what we know of it right now is that it's not really effectively being utilized in that part of the world. So that is just a little bit on the history in the other parts of the world. Now, CTOs in Ontario, I just decided to put these figures in. As of now, we have it up to in actual fact, for this study, it was from 2000 to 2005, but we don't have current numbers. Hopefully, maybe we may be able to tabulate it shortly. But from year 2000 to 2005, these were the number of CTOs that were issued in Ontario. We had 19,925. And of these, Toronto, as of April 1st, 2001 to March 2005, had 700 of those. So that is about 37% of CTOs that were issued were in Toronto. And in October, since then, the number has really been going up. So that's for our information. I don't know if we have any questions regarding any of these. Now, we've talked a little bit about CTOs and what is going on and what it entails, who is it for. Now, let's look at, does it have any benefits at all? So that is something we'll try and see if we can address here. The literature tells us that in Ontario, we haven't, well, so far there's only one research, one study that has been done, and that was done in 2005 by O'Brien and Farrell. That really came up and said CTOs really reduces readmission to hospitals. And also people who are on CTOs who are hospitalized tend to stay for a shorter period of time instead of being there longer. Why is that so? What we realize is that being in a CTO enables you to get a lot of support in the community. So you are able to make contact with your physician, community-based case managers. So what happens is even before an individual condition deteriorates to the point where even it crosses the baseline, there's always that intervention. So what happens is with the CTO, your case manager is able to intervene because before your condition gets worse. Why? Because when your condition gets worse, it takes a longer period of time for you to really stabilize or get to your baseline. However, if there's a quicker intervention, you get to your baseline quicker, earlier. So that helps. And that is why usually people on CTOs who are hospitalized tend to stay for a shorter period of time. And looking through all the literature, that is what the studies have confirmed. And there's numerous studies in the US that also attest to that. And also they say it decreases violent behavior. And also it decreases family burden. And also reduces the lower arrest rates. And also there's a less likelihood of victimization. And if you could remember earlier, I did make mention of the fact that people who are in CTOs, there's a tendency that if you are diagnosed with mental illness, people think you are a danger to society. And when you look at the Mental Health Act, especially the form one, it says before you be diagnosed, the form will be filled out, the question they ask is, are you a danger to yourself or others? So there's a tendency, there's the idea that, well, if you have the diagnosis, then automatically you're going to be a danger to yourself or others. But when we look through literature, it tells us that people who are diagnosed with mental illness are rather victims of violence. You know, either maybe abuse, being sexual, physical, emotional, or what have you. But what happens is we have the media on our side. So anytime somebody, even one person who is mentally ill, commits an offense, we get to hear of it. However, when John Doe or maybe Mrs. Doe or something commits an offense, well, we hear briefly and that's about it. And these are some of the problems that we have. Because when we even look at the idea of similar community treatment orders being introduced in places like New York City and California, they were all as a result of somebody, a mentally ill person, committing an offense. In the New York situation, they call it, just lost my train of thought on the person's name, but hopefully I'll remember and I'll bring it. They named it after an individual, a lady who was pushed down, who was pushed in front of a subway and was killed. And as a result, this person was really considered, because he's mentally ill, they came up with a law that would really take care of people like that. And I think a similar thing also happened in California, where mentally ill, I think, killed somebody and they decided, well, they need to come up with a law. So that is what is happening. So if I heard you correctly, I think the question that you're trying to ask is, how do we reconcile the idea of public safety, right, and people like this who are mentally ill? Honestly, let me confess, I don't have answers to that question, but I attempt to maybe look at it, because there are no guarantees. Yes, because an individual who's mentally ill perhaps may do something, but there are no guarantees that it's going to keep us safe. There are all kinds of programs that are available. I believe the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, they have the Law and Mental Health Program. And also they have the forensic program, where people who are mentally ill commit offenses, there is a way of working with them and helping them. But talking about community safety, I can't really answer that question. But the question that we also need to look at is, in our bid to look at it from that point of view, we also need to ask ourselves, how many, I mean, in terms of the general population, how many mentally ill people really commit serious offenses? I mean, the number is really small, you know, but that doesn't mean that we need to really excuse them or maybe say because they are ill, they could go ahead and commit it. Public safety is also important. Yeah. And also the other aspect is, in actual fact, housing tenure, they live longer in their homes and they do well because they have the support of physician where medication is monitored on a regular basis, also support of community case managers. And also they adhere to treatment and more frequent contact with case managers. Now, if you could remember when we said earlier, when they are left to be by themselves, I mean, when they are left alone without any form of community engagement, or maybe even asked to follow through with community engagement, they don't do it unless there is that form of provision. There's a law or there is an agreement that requires that they have to do that. So those are some of the problems that we have. But in actual fact, on a CTO or a similar type of program, what happens is they follow through. And most case managers, they see some of these patients on a regular basis, on an average, a minimum of once a week. And even with ACT teams, some even go as far as about three or more times a week. And also physicians as well. So it works out very well. And also there's an increase in engagement with treatment services. And also, according to the study, they said it improves the overall quality. One critique I have about some of these studies is that, especially the studies that were done by Schwartz and Swanson, these individuals are researchers that are based in North Carolina. And my concern, this is my own concern, my critique, but please, you don't have to take it. You can take it with a grain of salt. Looking through the literature, one thing I realize is most of the clients that they use for the study, in terms of you look at the demographics, in a place like North Carolina, I believe that they have quite a mixture. They have African Americans, they have Latinos, and they have the dominant culture, that is the white. But in actual fact, with a lot of the studies, especially by the Schwartz and things, I was really struck to see that a number of people that they recruited for this research were African Americans. And I was surprised to see that in actual fact, in one study, they had as many as about, I think, 67% of the respondents, I mean the end of subjects for the study, were African Americans. And also the other one, they had about 30-something percent were Latinos. So what are they trying to tell us? Are they trying to tell us it's these people who get sick? You know, anyway, that's also another research study that could be done, but I just thought of maybe throwing that in. So we talked about, look at it. Now, apart from, in actual fact, CTOs has its criticisms as well. It's not only beneficial, but it has its critics. And a lot of people have criticized it. Those of you who are familiar with the legal system here, there is one lawyer, for instance, her name is Anita Sigeti. I don't know if you've heard her name. She's really a strong advocate, I mean, against CTOs. And I remember, I think in 2001, she wrote a paper critiquing CTOs, the fact saying that it infringed on the rights of patients. The fact that somebody has to really come up with a treatment like that, requiring people to go for treatment with a legal backing. She didn't understand what that meant. However, and a lot of us embrace the idea, but when you sit back and you work with the clients who are on a CTO, and you look at the progress that they are making, it makes you feel that yes, once upon a time, it doesn't really apply to everybody. But it comes to a point where certain clients, certain group of people need a little bit of push, a little bit of support, a little bit of force. You know, but that it depends on how one feels about some of these things. And also, there have been studies, numerous studies, that also see CTOs as coercive, which is really true. Why? Because it doesn't really empower, give people the right to make their own decisions. But the question that comes up is, in our field, we work with a lot of clients who, some of them, you see, I mean, everybody sees a doctor and everybody sees that they are not well. And they will tell you, well, I'm not sick. I was forced to come to the hospital. You see somebody who doesn't have any insight into their condition, and he will say, well, you need to have your own rights. You need to be empowered. I'm not going to take medication. And you say, well, go ahead, don't take medication. How would we feel as a society if these things go on? This is just a question I'm throwing out there, you know. So we need to look at it from both sides of the coin. And also, the other argument is disempowering. Yes, I would say yes, because when you look at the idea of the empowerment theory, as clinicians, I think our goal is to enhance, encourage our clients to be able to make their own decisions, make right decisions, and make right choices. Now, when you put CTOs around their neck, a lot of them feel very uncomfortable about it. Because one thing that I've observed being in the field is that a lot of our clients, when you go and tell them in the hospital that a physician is considering putting you on a CTO, a lot of them, they say yes. You know why? Who can tell us why in a hospital environment? Your doctor wants to put you on a CTO, and they tell yes. They want to go home. If I say yes, I'm going to go home. So I'll just go ahead and do it. It's only a few who will be able to resist and say, well, I don't feel comfortable about this, and I'm not going to do it. You know, so these are some of the things. But overall, in actual fact, our role as coordinators is also to be as objective as possible, explain legislation to the clients, and let them know that they have the right to refuse it. And that would not impact or affect their stay in the hospital. So that is also something. And also, there's other aspects that says, well, there's no difference between CTOs and community-based treatment. So let's say we have ACTIM, we have community-based case management, like HOMFOC and other programs. There's no difference between them and CTOs. Why? Because when you put them on ACT, they will do well. So why do you worry about CTOs? These are some of the studies that have also come out. And a lot of these studies compared CTOs with control subjects, so like people who are not in CTOs. And a lot of them, especially the Keisley report, he's done numerous studies, and most of his studies come out saying, well, they don't see any difference. But looking at it critically, it depends on how you look at it, because there's this saying, they say beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder. CTOs also lies in the eyes of, you know, how you feel about it, you know. So that is also something we need to look at. Because a lot of the studies, recently there was a review that was done on CTOs in Ontario. And I think the report came out last year. And it said that, yes, CTO is really effective. However, it should be the last resort. So after you've tried everything and it hasn't materialized, well, you can explore the possibility of a CTO. So in actual fact, one thing we need to bear in mind, CTO is not a panacea to community-based mental health problems. But at least it's also a way, something we can explore. You know, so this information. So here are a few facts about CTOs. CTO can also only be issued by a physician. So it's a physician who recommends it. So maybe a doctor in a hospital, or even a doctor who's working in the community may decide, well, they feel there is a need for an individual to be put in a CTO. And when that decision is made, contact would have to be made with a coordinator who is based in various hospitals. So in Toronto, we have at the moment, we have 5 coordinators who are based in various hospitals in the city. And they can also make contact. So in the East Quadrant, we have a coordinator. And then the northern part, that is based at North York, I have my colleague, Susan Sapnanis, who's right here. And then the western part, we have someone. And also the central part of the city, that includes maybe Kemet and other hospitals, we also have a coordinator. So depending on where you are located, there's always a contact person. And if you have any questions regarding CTO, you can always contact somebody who can answer your questions. And also, we need to bear in mind that CTOs do not mandate forcibly administering medication. Though in certain parts of Australia, it's the norm. But in Ontario, you can't force an individual to take medication. If they say they're not going to take medication, there's nothing you can do. Just respect their rights. However, they can always be brought back to the hospital. And under the forms, there is a specific form that is used to bring such people back to the hospital. And a client, that is if the person is deemed competent. So here we're looking at being competent, that is having insight into your condition, and incompetent, that is not having any insight. And if you don't have any insight, you have a subsidy decision maker who decides for your treatment. So here, if an individual is deemed competent, he or she has to agree to the treatment. And if they say they do not agree to it, there's nothing you can do, you just need to leave them. But if they do, you can, CTO can be implemented. And the same applies to someone who is incapable. If you are considered incapable, you have no right, unfortunately, because even if you disagree, you have someone who's making treatment decisions for you. So it's that person who would have to speak on your behalf. And the last part says, well, somebody can appeal. And it's always, if a client feels that their rights is being infringed upon, or they feel they don't like it or they don't want it, they can always appeal that decision. And this could be done through either contacting their lawyer with a legal aid or a lawyer, or maybe through the Psychiatric Patient Advocate's Office, that's PPAO. Now, who is considered a success for CTO? There are some clients that you can work with them so far as CTO is concerned. Let's say these are individuals who respond to treatment in the hospital. They dislike, they hate the idea of being in the hospital. And also, they have some form of willingness to participate in the treatment. And it will surprise you to realize that, on the other hand, we have another group of people who enjoy being in the hospital. They consider the hospital like, a respite environment or a hotel. You know, once in a while, just take a little bit of a break. And if you tell somebody, well, when I put you on a CTO and you don't follow through, we're going to bring you back to the hospital. What are they going to say? Make my day. They're not going to follow through, So you need to also be very careful about that, So we're not going to look at a number of case scenarios. And in fact, I said number 2 of them. And then perhaps we'll be opening the floor for questions. Usually this is what happens. When an individual is referred for a community treatment order, it's the responsibility of the coordinator to make contact with the person and then get a little bit of information who this person is. So you get information about the demographics, number of hospitalizations, because there's a criteria that has to be met. And you go through all the information. So let's say we have Mr. M, who's been referred for CTO. This is how we go through it. Maybe we know he's about 35 years old, long history of schizophrenia, perhaps less than 20 years, multiple admissions to the hospital. So in this case, this person meets criteria. And we say, well, he has a history of aggression. He keeps himself when he's not well. That is when they don't follow through with medication. However, when they are brought to the hospital, they do well. They stabilize. And also in this person's background, there's been arrest and also been charged with assault and uttering threats. So as a coordinator, myself or Susan and others, when we get such a referral, what do we do? So just to give you an idea of what happens. when we receive a referral, usually from the physician or the social worker, I say social worker because a physician will recommend it and the social worker will make contact with the coordinator. And we assess whether the person really meets the criteria, that is the suitability. Meet with the client, we review the client's chart, you know, gather the necessary information, and then we make contact with social workers within the hospital to gather a little bit of information, or the nurse within the, in the hospital. And then in meeting with the client, what we do is we explain the purpose of the CTO, try to engage them, work with them, get a little bit of idea, an idea of who they are and how they really want us to work on the CTO. So when we get it and a client, if let's assume that this individual was deemed competent, we're yet to see. I have the treatment plan, I haven't looked at it, but let's assume that he's competent. He has insight into his condition. I would make a referral to a community-based program. I use the Canadian Mental Health because, in actual fact, in creating the CTO, the government provided some form of funding for CTO case management. So anytime the individual doesn't have any form of case management, we can automatically make a referral to the Canadian Mental Health Association. And in Ontario, we have the East team and the West team. So depending on the location of the hospital or location of the physician, the individual, we can always make a referral to either of these teams. So what they will do is they will also touch base, in actual fact, with the client and assess the client whether the client meets criteria and also come up with issues that the client may need in the community. And my responsibility as a coordinator is, after I've done all these things with the referral, I'll start developing a community treatment plan. A community treatment plan, in a nutshell, is similar to a discharge plan. But in actual fact, because it's a legal mandate, has a legal backing, it has to be developed in a way that, it has to be developed like a contract, an agreement between a client and a physician, because each is between a doctor and a physician. So we developed a treatment plan with insights from the client, the physician, and all the parties that are involved in this person's treatment. And after that, what happens is we contact the physician and they start the process. And with that, there is a number of forms that are issued so far as CTO is concerned. And also, we include the psychiatric patient advocate's office because they have to give the right advice to the patient. And if there is a substance decision maker involved, they also receive right advice. The essence of a right advice is just for the rights of the patient, to ensure that nobody pushes anything down their throat so that it doesn't infringe on their rights. So here, they are being respected. So when they meet with the rights advisor, all that they do is they try to explain the extent of the treatment and what is expected of them and what they are supposed to do. And if perhaps they don't follow through the agreement, what is going to happen to them. So that is basically what is done so far as rights advice is concerned. So that's basically what happens. So this is a sample of a community treatment plan. So it talks about the fact that there is a physician, let's say Dr. X, who will be responsible for issuing the CTO. And also the fact that, this person will make sure they take their medications, and if there's a case management involved, you'll be following through with it. So these are the steps that will be happening. So with this individual, what happens is when he's referred to CMHA, CMHA will assist him in addressing the issue. So if there is a court diversion involved, they would assist him with that. And if the issue of housing, they would also assist them with that. So CMHA will be responsible for the case management piece. If there is a need for him to get a drug card or what have you, they will be assisting with every aspect of it, and to ensure that at least everything is okay with them. So that's basically what they do and their responsibility. Now we move on to a second case, case scenario 2. Let's say we have a client by name Ms. Z, 37-year-old female, homeless, no fixed address, bipolar, and multiple admissions within a period of 3 years. And responds well to structure and recent assault charge pending. How do we address this? It will also be similar to what we do with the first client. However, the difference will be the fact that there will be an aspect of court diversion, just similar to the first one. And also because this person doesn't have a fixed address, where they are discharged from the hospital, where do they go? Nowhere to go. So the case management team would ensure that they find housing for the person. Even if there is a temporary place for the individual until they get him a permanent housing, it's their responsibility to do that. And more often than not, I think they've really been good. Since I started working with them, they've really been good with that. And it works out well. And the role of the case manager is to engage the patient in the community to ensure that at least the patient does well. Engage the patient, be it whether they want to go back to school or maybe really adjust and establish something in the community, work with them on a regular basis. So that is basically what they do. So the treatment plan would also be similar to the first one. Yeah, so that's basically it, I think. So this is if you have any questions, feel free to ask. I don't know if with what we talked about, it answered your question. But a little historical aspect of what we are doing right now, I mean, what we're talking about is the funding for CTO is provided by the Ministry of Health. It's provided by the Ministry of Health. So they provide funding and the hiring and everything. But in actual fact, with the coordinators, funding was provided to the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, for coordinators, and also for case managers through the Canadian Mental Health Association. So that is how we work. And if somebody needs help in a community, a physician can always make that request, and the coordinators will be working in tandem with the parties to ensure that everything works out well. If I got your question correctly, what she's trying to say is, well, she's realized that, well, she made a comment by saying, well, CTO is for 6 months, and then it has to be evaluated. Maybe we'll talk about that. And also wondering how maybe coordinators or people who work with clients in the community are able to really engage them within that short period of time. And also the fact that there is a long waiting list, so far as psychiatric help is concerned, and how we really facilitate that, how we work with that. Is that right? Right. CTO in itself is for 6 months. However, it's renewable. So it doesn't have to be evaluated by, you know, a review board or anything. A physician can say, well, I don't think my client has made progress, and I'm willing to renew it again, without necessarily having to have a review board meeting. However, it's 1 year. It's after 1 year that there has to be a review board. And even with that review board, if a physician is really committed to the welfare or the care of the patient, they can always go to a review board. I know of a patient right now who's been on a CTO. I think the patient is in his 7th year. And I give kudos to the doctor because it speaks to how committed this doctor is. Well, kudos, and also criticize the doctor a little bit. How can somebody be on a CTO for 7 years? Anyway, but the question is, you know, the doctor is really consistent with the individual and always goes before the review board and argue her case and say, well, I've worked with this client, and I think there is no CTO for this client, she is not going to do well. You know, so it works out well. But it calls for commitment. You need to really be committed. And the question that comes up is, how many physicians are really that committed? Because doctors have numerous patients, and a lot of them, they just put you on a CTO for the first 6 months, and they forget about you. I mean, they work with you as it has to. I'm critiquing the medical system, I forget. You know, but that is how they approach some of these things. So it's difficult. But that is why we have case managers and coordinators who periodically remind the physician that this person's CTO is about to expire. Would you want to renew it? You know, petty reminders like that also help. And also with regard to the resources. When you're on a CTO, yes, so far as case management is concerned, you are assured of your case management. That is why I talked about funding provided to this Canadian Mental Health for that resources. So it works out pretty quickly. But the other resources is more often than not, but it doesn't happen often with psychiatrists. There are times we don't have psychiatrists, but even that, we're able to find psychiatrists for the patient. So it works out pretty well. So far as those issues are concerned, I don't think it's much of a problem. Yeah. So it depends on who the physician is and the level of commitment. But overall, I think it's really a positive, an encouraging thing. Okay, he started. Okay, then we'll go here. Okay. If I heard correctly, what he's saying is he's given two scenarios that he's witnessed. One turned out to be a success story. The other didn't materialize. And I think what he's trying to say is just how do we look at this in terms of maybe working with a patient who decides to take medication and the other who doesn't. Well, in actual fact, if you could remember, we're talking about CTOs, we respect the rights of the individual. So when you're on a CTO, it's an agreement. It's like a contract that's been established between a patient and a physician. And also we have the case managers and other parties who are involved in the agreement. Now, if the patient decides to take medication, they work with the person. If the patient decides not to take the medication, they continue to work with the person. But they wouldn't force the person to take the medication. Try to engage the person. However, what happens is when you don't take your medication for a period of time, you decompensate, your condition gets worse, right? So because there is some form of case management involvement, they are always able to inform the doctor that this is the condition of the individual. So instead of waiting for this person's condition to really get worse before being brought to the hospital, there's always that quick intervention. So the person is brought back to the hospital. On the other hand, what the person can do is they have the right to make their own decisions. They can decide to fire the case management team and say, I don't want to work with you again. Now, if they say, I don't want to work with you again, I don't think the case management team would try to impose force themselves on a person. So all that they would need to do is contact a physician, and the physician may decide to bring the person to the hospital to assess the frame of mind of that individual. So basically, that is how it's looked at. So they wouldn't force anything on the person.
I think we will have to draw to a close. Thank you, Magnus.